You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back for hour number two on the Fantasy Sports Network, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I here for another 2 hours, going through some stories that are happening all around the MLB landscape, around the NFL landscape. It's that time of year. We had the NBA dunk contest last night. Glenn Robinson III wins the NBA dunk contest. I did watch some of it. Last year's finalist, Aaron Gordon, was kind of upset, I guess, in the first round. People expected him to advance and perhaps win the contest, but he did not. So Glenn Robinson III takes it over Jones Jr. Is it Derek Jones Jr.? I'd have to double check. But in any event, so that happened last night. I watched, excuse me, I watched the three-point contest last night, and Klay Thompson, considered by some to be the best shooter in the world, the only possible challenge to that maybe being his teammate, Steph Curry. He did not advance to the finals, so it was a shoot-off between Eric Gordon and John Wall was in the mix there, but it ended up being Eric Gordon and Kyrie Irving. Those were the finalists, and they actually tied in the final round and had to go to overtime to do it again, and they ended up Eric Gordon, who formerly played, he's with the Rockets now, he formerly played in New Orleans with the Pelicans, and the game being in New Orleans, people thought maybe he had a built-in advantage from being part of, he used to play in the Smoothie King Center, which is the name where the Pelicans play. So for Eric Gordon, George, one thing that I did watch after the three-point contest, which is very cool, you're familiar with Craig Sager, the longtime NBA announcer, used to wear flashy clothes. He unfortunately passed away from a long battle with leukemia, I believe, or lymphoma. I can't remember which of the two it was, but in any way, cancer. He passed away this past year. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I know who Craig Sager was.
So, in any event, they did a nice tribute to him last night after the three-point contest. They showed a nice video, and coming out of the video, Ernie Johnson, the longtime TNT announcer, he sort of made a nice tribute to Craig as well. And then they decided that they were going to raise money for the Craig Sager Foundation. And they had three of the finalists, go shoot baskets, try to shoot three-pointers. They came up with an initial check, and then they were going to have them add each three-pointer they hit was $10,000. And then not only did they do that, but to make it more of a television factor, they brought celebrities in off the sidelines to shoot three-pointers as well. So these guys started raining in threes. They had 1 minute to do it, raised $130,000, and then it got bumped up to $500,000 with Shaq getting involved. It was, you know, very much celebrity-based, and it was fun to see that, but I just thought it was a really nice tribute. It was something I wanted to mention during the show. $500,000 to the Craig Sager Foundation.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it was
nice.
I didn't watch it. Yeah, it was a nice little tribute, just something I thought was interesting to mention. Anyway, back to the Yoenis Cespedes thing that we were talking about during the break.
Sure.
And we got off on a tangent, which is all well and good at this time of year, but he was saying that he's done with the car shows from last year and the horses and all that kind of stuff. So he claims, and I have no reason to disagree with him, but he doesn't think that anything related to the cars or the horses was much of a distraction. It wasn't anything that was planned from him. He was just trying to have a little fun, trying to keep it loose. He thinks he's still as much of a leader. I don't know that he's a vocal leader in the clubhouse. I think he's a guy that goes out there and just tries to smash the ball every day. So do you have any thoughts about that? Did you think Yoenis was any kind of distraction previously? Or do you think that it's good that he's curtailing this activity?
Do I think he was any kind of distraction? Yeah, probably. It was early in camp. It wasn't like he was doing this March 28th before they're leaving. He was doing it early in the camp first couple of weeks, so I didn't have an issue with it. You know, personally, I didn't care. I'm not a car guy. I didn't care what kind of car. What kind of horse? Yeah, you could have been driven a spaceship. I wouldn't have cared. So, like I said, I think it was, once again, much ado about nothing. They're looking for stories. They found one. Yes, he provided the ammunition for it. You know, obviously, you can't say he didn't plan it. He did plan it. He was bringing in different cars every day. So he did plan it. But other than that, do I think it was a huge thing? Do I think it was a major distraction? No. No. It didn't bother me at all. I think it was, once again, looking for stories, found one.
Yeah, he said I don't think my focus was ever not on baseball last year with the cars. It was just something off the field. I think the second I was on that field, the focus was always on baseball, and that's how it continues to be. On the field last year, he hit 31 homers in 132 games, 543 plate appearances. We mentioned the injury, the hamstring injury that lingered a little bit. 280, but an 884 OPS. So obviously, Yoenis is all about the power. As a baseball player is concerned, obviously has a big arm. It's another tool for him. But ultimately, he's back. He's in a place where he seems to be comfortable playing, George. So your thoughts really just on Yoenis this year as a contributor to the Mets and his fantasy value?
Well, he better hit. Because the Mets need him. I mean, we spoke with the Mets yesterday. That rotation is really, you know, it seems like you pull one string, they're all going to get hurt. Wheeler, Mats, Harvey, you just don't know what you're going to get. And Syndergaard should be fine. I'm not really all that worried about DeGrom, but everybody else I have to be. So they need the hit there. You go all around here. Lucas Duda, okay. You know, if he's a streaky guy, he'll put together that, you know, that 1 3-week stretch where he looks like the next coming of Babe Ruth, and that's about it. Neil Wilkins.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. I've tracked that for the last few years. Let's say people get on the Lucas Duda bandwagon, and that thing is over before the month is out, usually.
Neil Wilkins got the bad back. Astrubal Cabrera has no range at shortstop. David Wright's an injury waiting to happen. We all know that's and he's at the very best, but he's going to play five games a week anyway. So that's a problem. Travis d'Arnaud, he's the injury of the week. Just a matter of time until he figures out, well, what he's going to hurt next. You know, the outfield we talked about yesterday is sort of a joke that they haven't fixed this. Granderson, Bruce, Conforto, Lagares is there. The best defensive center field is Lagares, but he can't get on the field because he can't hit. You know, so that's a problem. Granderson's not a center fielder at this point in his career. The Mets defense, really, what's going to probably be the downfall of his team? You know, the Mets tried to play up that suspense, which is great, above average defensive outfielder last year. No, not so much. He's got an above-average arm. That's it. Catching the ball became issues for him last year. How many fly balls did he drop? 3, 4?
Yeah, he's not good tracking the ball. He's got a rifle for an arm, but that's just really, I mean, that's for show. If you're not tracking the ball, what does it matter?
Yeah, so the Mets have a lot of question marks. I think they're a playoff team, but they have an awful lot of question marks. For them to really be a World Series team, so many things have to go right. They probably still need to acquire another offensive player at some point. But where's he going to play? Who leaves? You know, Bruce, I think, will get moved eventually, but that's not for a major piece. Bruce is going to be moved because they have too many outfielders right now. They can't afford to keep screwing up Conforto. If you go for that center fielder, what are you going to do with Granderson? You know, you need that first base. They probably should have non-tended Lucas Duda, let him walk. You know, I think that would have been would have solved one problem there. As the Mets have it's an interesting composition of a team. If not for this pitching staff, no one would really be talking about the Mets.
So, you know what's odd, though? I know he was terrible once he got here last year. I was talking about Jay Bruce. I know he's terrible once he got here. But when you're taking a look at it now, obviously you can look at it two ways. You can say, Bruce, of the guys that they can move, Bruce is the one that will get the most return, right? But conversely, of the outfielders that they have on the roster, he's in the top three outfielders that they have from a talent perspective, correct?
Correct.
So I just don't know that you could put together an outfield with Cespedes, Conforto, and Bruce. That would be a tough look, correct?
No center fielder.
That's right. So, and then just, I guess the decision really is that if we move Granderson, we're just not really going to get all that much. So why don't we just keep him because we like him and we can just play Conforto there. Or rather, we can play Granderson there with Lagares if we can, and then get Conforto with Forto. As you said, it's a tough composition. I can't really figure out what the best thing is. I just do find it odd that if you're ranking the outfielders, Bruce is one of the best three. So I just don't know what they're going to do. That makes any sense. I don't know if any of it will make any sense. It's just something that they have to do by design.
Yeah, well, the problem is Granderson actually has more value than Bruce for whatever reason.
You think? Okay.
Yeah, it was Stuart Spahr said many times that when over the offseason, when the Mets were trying to move Bruce, teams wanted Granderson, probably for the flexibility. that he can play some center field. Not on a full-time basis, but can play some center field where Bruce really cannot. Although the Mets even think about playing Bruce in center field at times, once again, to alleviate some part of this problem where then Conforto could play right. It's a mess. I said it yesterday. I'll say it again. This should have been alleviated during the offseason. You had months upon months to figure out a solution here, and yet you go into the regular season, putting it all on Terry Collins' head to get enough playing time for everybody. Maybe Bruce gets moved during the during spring training. Maybe there's an injury to somebody that sort of solves this problem. You know, then you don't have to worry about it. But if not, you know, this could be something that's a problem. Bruce is going to want to play, and now you got to put him on the bench. Granson wants to play. Conforto should play. So you know, someone's got to sit here. It's not going to be pretty. Now, I think Granson would probably handle it well. You know, he seems to have he's always been a good clubhouse guy. He seems to be that kind of professional where if they benched him, he'd be he wouldn't sulk and whine. I don't know if we could say that about Bruce. You know, because once again, he was having an MVP type season until he came over to the Mets last year, and then died. You know, whether it's City Field, whether it's getting up in the Great American Small Park anymore, whatever it is, he died when he came over to the Mets. So, you know, I'm just surprised. Actually, with the Mets, I guess I shouldn't be surprised. But they really should have figured out a solution for this. And for fantasy owners, I mean, what do you do? None of them might be full-time players. You know, outside of Cespedes, is there anybody else on the Mets offensively that you want to start in your fantasy lineup?
Probably not. The only shot you'd have, really, I mean, you know, Bruce could figure it all out, but, you know, we don't even know if he's going to be here. Conforto is the one guy that you'd probably want at a value to see, you know, what if he puts it together. You know, then Conforto could be somebody of value. But certainly at the beginning of the season, you would have no real confidence that he would be that guy.
No, Conforto was, once again, a very good prospect here. They need to play him. I understand what Terry Collins was doing last year. He didn't have enough time or didn't have the luxury of letting Conforto break out of his slumps, playing him versus all the lefties, because he needed to win games. They're in the playoff hunt. You need to win games. You know, they're not a rebuilding team. We just give him 150 games and let's see what happens. You know, let him break out of his own slumps. You couldn't afford to teach him on the job. And I understand that. But you also can't go away from him too quickly. You can't turn Conforto into a platoon hitter at this point in his career. That's silly. You're losing value here. Conforto should be a very good major league ball player. So the Mets are trying to do two things at once here. And what I think is going to happen is if all these guys stay, it's going to be Conforto that pays the price. Generally, it is the rookie or the younger player that pays the price here. I don't think it'll be Bruce and Granson. I think he'll play, but I don't know if any of them will be a full-time player.
Yeah. So, George, back to Yoenis. He is ranking between 50 and 60, depending on which aggregated site you go to on NFBC. He's right around the 60th pick, 16th outfielder. Obviously, he said he better be able to hit. But as far as his draft value is concerned, is that about right for you? Are you going to move? Are you going to be reaching up to get him a little bit, or are you going to be moving back a little bit to get him at value? How do you think your stance on drafting Yoenis would be?
Well, I'm not moving back. I think eventually he may actually move up a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. He's a top 16 outfielder. Really don't have an issue with that. I think it's about what he'll be.
Guys right around him, just to give I'm on Fantasy Pros right now. Guys right in front of him, J.D. Martinez, Carlos Gonzalez, Ian Desmond. Right behind him, Christian Yelich, Andrew McCutchen, Gregory Polanco.
Yeah, we all know what Cespedes is going to do. He's averaged 33 home runs since coming over to the Mets. I understand part of that was split with Detroit, but it's not that Detroit was a hitter's haven there. He's going to bat probably in the round 2 aces. He's going to help you in average. He's going to give you power. He's going to give you RBIs. Not going to run. You know, the days of when I know he stole once in the mid-teens with Oakland back when he was there. He doesn't run anymore. He'll give you 3, 4, 5 stolen bases. Nothing you should care about. Runs could be a problem because there's no one to hit behind him. So, you know, you look at your power categories. Home run, RBI, help you out in average. And for where you're saying he's going, that sounds about right for me, but I think I probably have him more at the end of the fourth round, fifth round.
Sounds good. So we finally got to our Cespedes segment. So we'll got a couple of articles I wanted to focus on, too, after the break. Mike and George will be back in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning here until 10 o'clock. Following us up after this is Fantasy Bagels and Baseball. That's with Tony Zagata and Cha-Cha. That's from 10 to 12. After that is FanRag Baseball, Dal Melchior. He's from 12 to 1. And then the producers with our own Pete Considori and Chris Pavona. That's from 1 to 3. Pete, what do you got going on today, buddy, on the show?
We're probably going to be talking about a little NBA, a little off-topic stuff. I think we have a segment about certain bathroom accommodations in stadiums, so that should be
really
fun. Yeah.
Interesting. Bathroom accommodations in stadiums. I'd say the Nassau Coliseum bathroom before they renovated it, George, was about as old school as it got.
Bathroom accommodations. I see this is a must listen to.
It's about a proposed bathroom bill that was in Texas. So, yeah, listen in if you want to hear
you're going back to the Carolina problem. Oh, have fun with that.
Yeah, thanks.
Always
yeah.
Good to talk politics.
Yeah, I don't think we're going too political about it. I think we're kind of putting our own spin on it. So.
Yeah, you don't want to get rid of half the audience.
And this will be the last show the producers do as they're all fine.
All right. Well, good luck with that one.
Thanks.
Good luck with that segment and everything else that goes on there. So those guys will be on from 1 to 3. George, going back to a couple of things that we talked about yesterday, we were doing value picks throughout the day. I think we got through a bunch of guys, but a few guys that we actually didn't get to. Jameson Taillon, who's a youngster, I know there was a lot of buzz around him throughout the year last year as a potential future star. So what are your thoughts about him going into this season?
All right, well, you're right. Jameson Taillon and Tyler Glasnow for Pittsburgh were both much, much ballyhooed prospects. He had a solid season last year, Taillon. Only threw 104 innings, made 18 starts, 3.38 ERA, whip 1.12, a little less than a strikeout per inning. So the numbers are solid, but they're not otherworldly. You know, that's the issue there. I think where everybody wants better, right? Since you're expecting so much from, we want better. Mm-hmm. And I think he will get better. Generally, second year, they get better. Now, he will be on an innings limit. You know, we could say this about so many of these young pitchers. We know so many teams are going to baby him. You know, once again, we get back to the Goose Gossage thing here. But I don't think he'll be on a major limit here. He did throw 165 innings last year. Generally, I think it's the rule of 40, if you believe the Tom Verducci effect, whatever that was. So that puts you around 200, so he should be good there. He may be on more of a pitch limit, not over 100. Could lose some wins. Pittsburgh, they're a good team, not a great team, so they may be playing a lot of close games until late. So you lose your W's there, plus the bullpen's not as strong as it once was without Melanson. Bottom line, to answer your question, I like him. No real issue with him. I think he will get better. Like I said, 3.38 ERA. I don't think he's going to get into the twos, but maybe he lowers that slightly. The whip I'll take where it is at 1.12. If it gets better, great. I like that his strikeouts come up a tick a little bit. You know, right? He had 85 and 104 innings last year. Wouldn't mind that becoming a little bit closer. I'm not expecting a one for, a K per inning. I think that's way too much to ask here. But if you get that up, maybe that's of a 95 range, 95 and 104, pretty close. I'll take that. He comes down to a starting pitcher 3, starting pitcher 4.
Yeah, it's currently ranked as the 41st starting pitcher, according to FantasyPros.com aggregate rankings, 155th overall. So 15-team league, you have a good idea right around there. It's around 10, around 11, and people will probably go up and get a young pitcher like that.
Contrary towards 10 and 12-team leagues, that's where most leagues are.
Got it.
An overwhelming majority of leagues are 10.
I mean, that's where I'm at. That's where I play. So I know we talked recently about some 15-team leagues.
That's more industry-wide.
We'll definitely get some thoughts from Matt Modica next week because he went through a huge auction draft last night, and that was a 27-rounder.
I think he's still auctioning. I think he's still bidding now.
I think he said it was like 20. I think they go with like 25 or 27 players, and then they have a slow draft for the additional 25 or so players.
I do the same thing in a league. You do your auction for your starters, and then you do a reserve a snake draft for your reserves.
Got it. Which makes sense. So in your 12-team leagues, I'm just doing the math here. Just looking at like a 12th round pick here for Jameson Taillon. So I think some people go up and get him. To your point, George, though, about his innings and his innings limit, he threw 160 plus innings last year. As you said, that should get him to around 200 if you go by a kind of industry, a loose industry standard. But 200 innings, that should get you there.
He should be good.
You know
good.
What I mean? Yeah, he should be good.
He should be good.
And if you're running out of time towards the end of the year with that innings limit, it probably bodes well for how he's pitched, at least to that point. You don't want to lose him at the end of the year, but it means that he will probably have worked pretty well throughout the year.
Right. I think you're not really worried about Italian, but there are going to be some other pitchers you are worried about. And you don't want many of them. You know, one guy, even two that have an innings limit. All right. As you said, you want to be disappointed at the end because that means they pitch well for you. You know, if you don't care, though, that probably pretty much means they die, they blew up on you. So you want to care, but you can't afford to have three, four, five of these guys. What are you going to do in September? Especially in a head-to-head league, that's when your playoffs are. It's not like anything's established. So that's what you have to worry about, is having too many of these guys. One or two is not going to kill you.
Yeah, we talked about Robbie Ray yesterday, Tyon, John Gray. I don't know if we touched on John Gray yesterday in Colorado. So your thoughts about him this season?
We did talk about Gray yesterday.
I missed it. Sorry.
And you missed it. Wow, and you put up the question.
I mean, what am I doing, Jordan? I'm bringing up like 50 players a day. I can't remember them all. I'm sorry. That's bad on me. So anyway, let's repeat our thoughts on John Gray for this season.
I two words: Coors Field. That's all I have to say. It's Coors Field. I can't trust anybody pitching in Coors Field. I understand Gray, and this is what I said yesterday. It's not like Gray would be Clayton Kershaw if he wasn't pitching in Coors Field. And that's pretty much what I would need. You know, a great pitcher, but because he's in Coors, now it's a good pitcher. You know, and he's not that. You know, his ERA last year is 4.61, 1.26 whip. The strikeouts is what we liked. He struck out over a batter an inning. So the stuff is there. But starting pitchers as it is are four-category pitchers. Now you take Coors Field, the ERA and whip are going to be bad. Now he's a two-category pitcher. It's assuming you win some games. And Colorado's not a great team. So really, what's the upside here? It's the strikeouts. We all want the strikeouts. He'll have value depending on where he goes. He gets drafted in the right spot. I like him. If someone's going to reach for him and want him as an SP3, he is all yours. Good luck. I'm not going to take that chance. You know, I understand, he'll pitch on the road some. Sure. But those games at Coors are going to be killers. You're in a daily lineup league where you can take him out. At certain starts, of course, I'd probably like him a little bit more. But a weekly lineup league, I'm going to look at those starts. Oh, he's got two starts of Coors this week. Out of my lineup.
Yeah, I mean, 4.61 ERA last year and a 1.262 whip. So, to your point, he's hurting those categories while he's racking up strikeouts for you. So, I'm with you. While he's seen as a value pick by some, I think he's not a guy. I am in a daily league, though, so I can take him out of those Colorado starts, as I did with this next guy last year when he was on the road because the splits were so bad, and that's Dallas Keuchel. We've talked about him in the past a little bit, but some are seeing him as a potential value pick because he's dropped so far in some draft rankings. So as you have said in the past, you get worried about guys that you think have the profile of a one-year wonder, and you in some ways consider him to be that, correct?
In some ways, I mean, he did have two good years in 14 and 15. So maybe it's more than that. I think I worry also about he's a touchy-feely pitcher. You know, his average fastball is 89. That's it. He's not throwing hard. So if he's not perfect with location, he's going to get hammered. Plays in a ballpark that for the most part is small. And it's actually they brought the fences in because I think they finally got rid of that stupid hill in center field.
Thank God.
Dumbest thing I've ever seen in a baseball park. Let's put a hill in center field so we get our players killed. Just dumb. So I think they finally got rid of that when they brought that in a little bit. Maybe not massively, but certainly not going to help him. You know, and now we're hearing that.
Also not a stadium that needed to bring the fences in, by the way, in any way.
Oh, well, it's center field they did.
To get rid of the hill, yes. Monstrous. But I'm saying if it leads to more home runs, it's probably not a place that needed it.
It's an interesting state. That stupid wall in left field. Which I don't mind the short wall, but why make it a square?
I was down in Houston, by the way, as an aside. I was down in Houston last year for the Final Four, and I stayed in a hotel that was literally across the street from Minute Maid Park, and I didn't get a chance to go in. They even had a spring training game going on. It was like March 31st, so they had a spring training game going on, and I couldn't go. I had like a bunch of other stuff to do for work while I was down there, and unfortunately, I couldn't go in. But the stadium on the outside, at least, looks pretty cool. I got a chance to poke around a little bit, but not too much. Anyway, sorry.
So about Keuchel, you know, he's complaining about that his shoulder was bothering him last year from spring training. You know, and some people have said, oh, that's good news. He's healthy this year. Really? You're happy about a shoulder injury?
Yeah.
That doesn't make me feel any better about him. You know, it's, yeah, I think and everyone has to take a grain of salt without what players say nowadays. When was the last time you saw a player say, oh, I feel like crap? You know, I didn't work out at all this year. I didn't care, and I don't feel good. I don't think I'm going to play well at all this year. It just doesn't happen, right? Everyone's in the best shape of their career. They're going to steal 700 bases. They're going to run all day. They're going to hit 9,000 home runs, and they're going to pitch 700 innings and have 18 shutouts. That's what everybody says. So, you know, when you see it, when someone does admit something like, oh, I had a shoulder problem last year, as I was saying, it's a great assault. You just give me an excuse of why you didn't have a good year. You know, I said, Keuchel, I think there could be some upside there. He could be a steal, yes, because of where he goes, but I'm not going to bank on it.
Got it. How about a few relief pitchers that we didn't get a chance to talk about yesterday? Edwin Diaz for Seattle Mariners. Could rack up, you know, strikeout saves. Somebody that I didn't see exactly what you wrote about him in your closer report, but your thoughts on Edwin Diaz.
I like Edwin Diaz. I wouldn't have him in my top five, of course, maybe not even in my top 10, but he's somebody when I was describing what kind of closer that I like, I probably don't want to build my closers around him, but he's next in line. If he was my number two, which means I have even a better number one, I'm a happy guy, you know, because I think that's a really good start there. There's no one really pushing him, you know, as far as where he struggles a little bit. I think he will have a decently long leash. I know Steve Cishek is there, but he's coming back off surgery, and he wasn't very good to begin with. So I'm high on Diaz. I do like him. I think he could break into a top 10 by the end of the year.
Yeah, Edwin Diaz right now in NFBC draft is going as the eighth closer or eighth relief pitcher and about the 84th pick off the board. So you're getting him in that range, you know, seventh. Eighth round, something along those lines. Next pitcher that I wanted to get some thoughts are is Ken Giles, who we touched on in the past. I don't know that I've ever gotten your thoughts. I know Matt Modica is kind of high on Ken Giles, but thoughts about Ken Giles in Houston?
You know, we heard Houston come out and say this week that he's going to be the closer more often than not. That's an interesting little comment.
Yeah, it really is. It's not, you know, not one that builds a lot of inspires confidence.
Right. I mean, once again, it could be just a master manager of pushing some buttons here, making sure Giles is going to, you know, still be have that extra adrenaline, still be trying hard, not assume the job is his. You know, so I just found that interesting because you don't hear that. You just don't hear a manager say that he's going to be the closer more often than not. Either he is going to be the closer or he's not, or you're going to have a committee. So I didn't like hearing that because I actually am high on Giles this year. I do want him on my team. He would be somebody I wouldn't mind building my closer committee around. But now to hear him say that, I was like, wow, that's interesting. When I write the next closer report, which I don't know when it'll be yet, that's up to Tim McCullough, our editor, I'll probably have to put that in there. Now, you may want to be a little careful here because they do have other guys there. You know, Luke Gregerson's there. He used to be the closer. So maybe they think about giving him some saves every now and then. Maybe they're just trying to tell Giles, hey, you screw up one or two, that leash is going to be short. Houston is playing for a title. We've seen that this year. They are loaded for bear. You know, you trade for McCann. You sign Beltran. You sign Reddick. They are going for it. So that's it. They may not have the most patience if Giles struggles again like he did last year.
Yeah, Giles currently going about 119th off the board, 10th closer, according to NFBC. And in NFBC drafts, actually going legitimately higher than what the Fantasy Pros rankings will have you say. So there's a little bit of a gap there, about 20 picks or so, 18 to 20 picks on Ken Giles. So keep an eye out there with articles like this talking about the great value that he is and a lot of, you know, industry people sort of in favor of him. I would imagine he's one of those guys that in this next month could push up the list if comments like this don't keep coming out about the nebulous role that he will have. I think, as you said, you'd have to assume him to be the closer to start, at least. Hector Neris for the Philadelphia Phillies. Give us some thoughts, since you wrote the closer report, give us some thoughts specifically on Neris.
Well, I mean, they've already said Gomez is going to get first shot at it, and he deserves the first shot. So he's the guy you're going to draft here. But, you know, like so many teams, there is somebody else there. You know, the leash is going to be long. I think Gomez is a good closer. I think he could keep the job. Philadelphia is a young, up-and-coming team. They're not going to win 100 games this year, but they're not quite the terrible team they were. So they will get better a year or two from now. I said it yesterday. That National League East is going to be a beast in a couple of years. Philly's getting better. Atlanta has got a host of young starters coming in there. They're going to make that team good. We know Washington's going to be good because they'll spend the money. The Mets are going to have that pretty good staff for a while and have the wherewithal they want to go out and sign better players. They just don't want to do it. Which brings us to Gomez. My problem is this. I think he deserves to be the closer, but the fact that we're hearing so much about Hector Neris, which means sooner or later he's probably going to get his chance too, which is not good for Gomez owners. So he's a closer where if you're drafting him, he'd be more of that number three range, a third closer. Not someone you're going to be able to wait until the last round to get, like a Ryan Madsen or Houston Street, someone like that. But you may be disappointed. You know, Joaquin Benoit is there as well, another veteran that could give a bridge there if they feel they need it. So I like Gomez. I think he deserves a shot. I think he should really probably be I think he should probably have a little stronger job strength there where he doesn't have to worry about losing it. But in the end, I think he will.
So would Norris be the type of guy that we talked about a little bit yesterday with a couple of other pitchers where maybe he's picking up some holds for you during the year and then seizes that job and the stats transition from holds to saves and potentially pitching well all throughout the year?
Well, that's generally the way we assume it's going to work. Your next best pitcher is the hold guy. But well, the veteran there, Joaquin Benoit, might give me some pause because we've seen this before. Managers like tend these close situations like to go with the veteran guy, the guy that has the bigger track record, the guy they can trust. That being said, Norris had 28 holds last year, and he might get saves at some point. If I'm drafting, if I'm in a league that has holds, or if I'm in a league, you know, we didn't talk about this yesterday, Mike, but one thing I truly believe in when it comes to relievers, especially on guys like this, Cam Bedrosian, I think it's a great example. I think Matt was talking about him yesterday. Yes. I don't mind drafting guys like this because, you know, you draft them late. You know, if you get a dollar guy, $2 at most in an auction, and you're drafting him late in a snake, you can get them for nothing. And two things here. One, they protect your WHIP and your ERA, right? Because they're not going to have big sample sizes, you know, maybe 80, 90 innings at most, but they're going to protect your WHIP and ERA. And then you get the added bonus that eventually they might get some saves.
Yeah, Hector Neris going 250th overall, so it's a very late pick.
Isn't that better than you draft the fifth starting pitcher for a team? Yes, he's going to get more strikeouts. He's going to pitch more ratings, but he's also going to blow up your ERA, blow up your WHIP, and the wins won't be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a league that has holds, so I'm on board with the Bedrosian and Neris types. Got to hit a break here. We'll come back, continue this discussion in a couple of minutes. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I were continuing. I wanted to continue a discussion, George, that we had to hit break on. But it's particularly relevant for me because the keeper league that I'm in, and one of these days I'll be able to get access to the stupid league so I can figure out exactly when we are having to do our keepers by. I think we've got a few more weeks to go. But We do an extraordinary amount of categories, just like at least compared to some leagues. We have, I think it's 8 hitting categories and 7 pitching categories, one of which is holds. So there's a lot of pitchers at play when it comes to something like this. So I'm really going to be on board with the Giles, the Bedrosians of the world, because I need to work hard when my starting pitchers get blown up, like they did last year with Matt Harvey and Dallas Keuchel. Especially Matt Harvey, the way he pitched at the beginning of the year, I was really in a hole, and I was relying pretty heavily on guys like, I think I had Hector Rondon and a couple of other guys to try to help me keep the ERA and the WHIP down when I was struggling.
I think, I don't mind the whole category. I actually kind of like it. My problem is this. When you add the 6th category for pitching, what 6th category are you adding for hitting? And the reason I'm concerned about this is because you want to be very careful that whatever category you're adding in hitting just doesn't make the great players greater. Because you know, that gives the advantage to the players who have the higher draft picks, who draft the Trouts, who draft the all those great players. That just gives you another category for them to do well in. You know, so yeah. You got to be very careful. That's one. I think I'm more of a of just adding holds to the save category, saves plus holds. Yeah, I understand what's nice about holds that you're opening up the field to a whole bunch of new players. It also protects, you know, I said about the closer report, 30 closers, what I wrote yesterday. Half of them won't have a job by the All-Star break. This protects that somewhat. And you have saves plus holds. Well, just you don't have to draft the closers. You can draft top setup men. You know, they're probably not going to get as many saves as a top closer, but the holds is enough to hold you over. You won't, you know, you're not going to finish in last because all your closers lost their job. You understand what I'm saying there, Mike?
Yeah.
So I don't mind the. I like the holds. I like the fact that it opens up the player pool, and I'm for anything that opens up the player pool. I like that. So, but I think I'd prefer it. Yeah, and it holds is basically a new thing in fantasy in the past couple of years. So I think I'd prefer it though to be its own separate category. Its category with saves, just combine it into one.
Got it. So that's good there. I think we covered all the value players that I wanted to speak about. So I wanted to get to a little bit of news because we didn't really take care of news at the top of the show. The Padres made a deal for Jared Weaver. No fantasy relevance there, really. I mean, he's ranked about as low as you can get on the board. But one player that did, they officially announced a deal. The Dodgers officially announced a deal with Chase Utley. So manager Dave Roberts said he views Utley as an everyday player, even though the trade for second baseman Logan Forsyth filled the position where Utley started last year and appeared to close the door on Utley's return. So I guess I would ask you, you know, and Utley will start at second base against certain right-handed pitchers as well as take over when Forsyth moves to third base on days Justin Turner doesn't start. So I guess I would ask, amongst those three players, how does this impact them in a material way, or do you think that this is just, you know, a similar situation last year? I mean, the Forsyth trade obviously has an impact. I just want to get your thoughts, really. And saying something like when Justin Turner doesn't start, I mean, they just re-signed Justin Turner, so you would think that he's going to be in there most days.
Listen, I think Turner's certainly going to be in there most days. You know, it could be a mix of this really could be something else where you need an injury to solve this problem here. Because once again, there's too many bats for one less position. So someone's got to sit each day. Maybe it's Forsyth starts the season in the minors. You know, they did bring him over from Tampa Bay in the big trade during the for Jose De Leon to top guys. I don't know. Like I said, it's a log jam here. You know, you look at Forsyth, I'm not in love with this guy. I'm just not. You know, I know he had a decent year last year, 20 home runs, 52 RBIs, 6 stolen bases. And this was in the Tropicana Field, which is not a good hitter's park at all. Had 17 home runs the year before. excuse me, I don't think this is a super player. You have to have him. He's a righty. Utley's a lefty. This smells like a platoon. I mean, it just smells like a platoon to me. Yes, there could be days where they both play when Turner needs a day off and Utley moves over to third base. Fine. You know, Adrian Gonzalez is banged up right now. Maybe Utley plays a little first base, which is where he started off in spring training. So maybe Utley's the utility guy here, plays all over the place, and Forsyth gets more at-bats that way. In the end, I don't view either one as more than a middle infielder, and I'm not really going after either one. I mean, you look at Forsyth's numbers. Like I said, 37 home runs the past two seasons. That's interesting. But he also played 280 games the past two seasons. Is he going to get that? I just don't think he's going to play 100. That's an average of 140. I don't think he's going to play 140 games this year, not 140 full games.
I mean, I guess from a Dodgers team perspective, though, Forsyth could get frustrated by this. By the way, I also read an article just this morning before we went on air. You know, it's just a few weeks ago that they made this trade for Forsyth, and Evan Longoria was actually pretty bummed. He said he's surprised and upset that they got rid of Forsyth. He said he got pretty close to him, and he thought that they were in a good spot with Forsyth moving forward. It sounds to me like you sort of like the trade for the Rays that they got maybe more than they dished out. Is that fair to say?
That is very fair to say. I very much like Jose De Leon. I think that gives the Rays another top-notch starter.
Yeah, so they've done a really good job over the years, obviously, of acquiring young talent. Over the winter, they've now traded away Forsyth, starting pitcher Drew Smyly, but added Colby Rasmus and injured catcher Wilson Ramos and former Braves outfield prospect Malik Smith, as you just detailed, Jose De Leon. So in some ways, it looks like, you know, the Rays are projected to do a lot better than they did last year. but it's not necessarily a playoff team. But so you liked what they did there. I guess from the Dodgers' perspective, Utley's at the tail end of his career, so maybe having him in a platoon is the only way to keep him healthy over the long haul. You know, he's not going to be an everyday second baseman. It would be difficult.
Oh, I agree. I think you said it perfectly. I think to keep him healthy and keep him fresh all season long, a platoon makes sense.
I think you would have to be mindful, though, of the frustration that Forsyth would feel. You have to figure he's a professional, he's going to get through it, and, you know, hell, if there's an injury, then maybe this sorts itself out, as we're saying. But I found it odd in what I just read that on days that Justin Turner doesn't start, that's going to be a handful of days. They just gave him a lot of money, $64 million
over
4 years.
That's just saying that they can move him over a little bit, give a couple of extra starts there.
Yeah.
Justin Turner's going to play 140, 145 games.
That's what I'm saying. It's, you know, he's, you don't give him that kind of money to have him, in any kind of rotation. So I guess you'd have to be mindful. Like you said, that is interesting with Forsyth stats, but I just wonder how frustrated he would get if he was in a straight platoon, if Utley played 80 games.
Like I said, it's a problem that Dave Roberts is going to have to figure out who plays where and what they get, make everybody happy here. I think the most obvious thing is a platoon between Forsyth and Utley. I understand, you know, that's... You know, how do you justify trading a top prospect like De Leon for a platoon player? And Forsyth probably doesn't deserve to be in a platoon. I think he could take the job by himself. Forsyth is, you know, he's not Robinson Cano, Ian Kinsler, certainly not Jose Altuve, the top second baseman. But he's a guy that if he did play all year, probably would hit 20 home runs. His average, I don't think would help you, but wouldn't hurt you either. So I get it, why he could help. Fantasy owners want him to start. But once they re-signed Utley, which they did, what, last week, that pretty much told you all you needed to know. All of a sudden, the Forsyth love had to come down a bit. Because I don't think Utley signed there to be a pure bench player and never play. He's a veteran who could still hit, could still play. He's going to play some. Maybe Forsyth, even though he's the right-handed, usually the left-handed gets the better side of the platoon because there are many more right-handed starting pitchers in the Major League Baseball than left-handers. But maybe Forsyth still gets some of those starts. Maybe he only sits versus tough right-handers, you know, the best of the best. And those are the ones that Utley gets. Maybe.
Let's talk about the Dodgers at length after the break because, you know, something as I'm just looking through this, it probably didn't jump out to me, but now after a bunch of acquisitions they made this offseason, the Dodgers have a little bit of a different look to me than maybe I would have thought otherwise. So let's take a quick break here. George and I will talk about the L.A. Dodgers after the break. We're back. Talking about the L.A. Dodgers, George talking obviously about that, Logan Forsyth, Chase Utley, what looks like a platoon. As you said, it smells like a platoon because nobody said anything about it specifically yet. But George, they obviously made some acquisitions this offseason, talking about Forsyth, Rich Hill in the mix, a few other guys that have moved around now. A lot of the high-profile guys that we've talked about are guys like Julio Urias, which we talked about yesterday. We really like him as a young, starter on the rise, one of the younger guys in MLB. I think he was the youngest player in MLB last year when he came in. We had Corey Seager is obviously a young star for them, but a lot of other players that we're talking about on the Dodgers are older guys. I don't know that they have the look of being a quote-unquote old team, but we got guys like Adrian Gonzalez, 35. We have Brandon Utley that's going to be in the mix there. They re-signed Justin Turner, who isn't old yet, but he's 32, and they signed him to a four-year deal. Rich Hill's 37 years old. I just wonder, like, is this a team that... Is there a window? I'm just curious how you see the Dodgers as a team this year. Obviously, a lot of talent there, but is it a team whose window is getting short? Granted, they have the best starting pitcher in baseball for another several years, but is their window not closed yet, but is it on the way down because this team's aging a little bit? And do they have enough young talent to replenish all of this?
Well, the short answer is yes. I mean, you mentioned Adrian Gonzalez, right? 35. They got Cody Bellinger, who's really, I think Gonzalez is the perfect guy just to, bide your time until Bellinger is ready, which maybe next year, maybe the year after at most.
Yeah, so signed through 2018, there. So you don't have too much longer to wait.
Right. So Bellinger could be there by, midway part of next season to take over for Adrian Gonzalez. You got Corey Seager, so you got a building block at short. Justin Turner, okay, I may not have given him that contract either, but still, at 32 years of age, had a very career year last year, so he's okay. I mentioned Logan Forza. I don't mind him at second base. Outside of Seager, no superstars here, but solid. The outfield I might get a little bit more worried about. I mean, Puig has always been disappointing, right? I mean, since this year one, we're still waiting for that breakout. Maybe he matured last year and figured it out. Maybe he didn't.
What do you think?
You have to be encouraged that after he got called back up from AAA, he looked like a different player. You know, whether that materializes over the an offseason and this, or if he goes back to the player he used to be, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You're hopeful here. We've heard his name mentioned in trade and quite a few trade rumors, but his trade value is low. You know, maybe the Dodgers hoping he can rebuild, rebuild some of that, and they'll move him. Maybe they won't. The outfield is a weak part of this team. You look at Puig and Wright. You got Jock Peterson in center field, who seems to be either a home run or a strikeout. And left field is probably going to be some kind of platoon between Tolles and Gutierrez. Nothing to be excited about out there. You know, there's some upside with Peterson and Puig, but nothing, no superstar potential there. So there's, you know, that's an issue. But as long as you got Clayton Kershaw, I mean, you're going to be a threat. I mean, we know how good Kershaw can be. Hopefully the back issue from last year doesn't pop up again. Hey there, long term. Rich Hill, okay, yes, he's 37. I would have my doubts as well, but maybe he can keep up this late career resurgence of him. Maeda Urias is the real deal. Maeda is a fine third starter. You know, Hyunjin Ryu, see if he can come back. Scott Kazmir, you have some depth there. McCarthy, Stripling, Yadier Alvarez, another one of their top prospects, is coming along. And they got a couple of left-handers there, Verdugo, Calhoun. So they have a good system here. They'll be okay. Do I think they're the best team in the National League? No. You know, that's the Cubs to me. But I think they'll be in the mix for a playoff, if not winning the National League West, a wild card team.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. You do a lot of analysis. You do a lot of reading about certain teams and movements. And then you just start taking a look at that starting lineup. You're like, wow, there's a lot of threes on the board in the first number of the age category on these guys. But for this year, obviously, I don't think you can be too worried about it. The talent level is there, and they obviously do have some young building blocks. And do you feel like you said as a system, as an organization, you feel like they're still okay too long term? Like this isn't going to be a bottom out scenario for them?
No, I don't think it'll be a bottom out scenario. And what we have to remember is this: you know, come the trade deadline, if they want, they can acquire anybody or anybody they acquire, either by trading some of their prospects to get a good player or taking on a big contract that another team wants to get rid of. And that'll happen. You know, the Dodgers say they want to be a little bit more fiscally constrained. You know, the new collective bargaining agreement has steeper prices, penalties for going over. But in the end, if they have to spend, they'll do that. And I think we need to keep an eye on that. So I think if they need something, there'll always be teams that, you know, maybe didn't want to trade that good player now, but once they bought him out, they'll want to get rid of that contract for whatever reason. So the Dodgers will be able to replenish that way too. I would specifically look more for an outfielder there, or maybe even a starting pitcher.
You think anybody's really going to challenge them in the West?
I think the Giants are dangerous. You know, I don't think the Rockies and Padres are going to do much. But I think the Giants are very dangerous. They think they can make some noise out there, if not outright beat L.A. You know, the Diamondbacks, I think, are an interesting team. I just don't know if they can, you know, they need Zach Greinke to be Zach Greinke. And I don't know if that's going to happen in Chase Field. You know, Chase is completely different than Chavez Ravine, so I think it's going to be much tougher for them. But I think they'll be certainly much better than they were last season. But in the end, for me, Mike, it's all about the Giants and Dodgers, just like it has been for most of this, past decade?
Yeah, true. I mean, the Giants were obviously on fire first half of the year last year, and then it went to pure misery, really, in the second half for them. And still, only finished four games out of the Dodgers. It wasn't like the Dodgers ran away and hid. You know, they had a kind of relatively comfortable lead, but still, the Giants were in the mix. Winning 87 games is nothing to shake a stick at. It's what the Mets won, and, you know, the Giants were in the mix there. So we shall see how that plays out. Ultimately, I think the Dodgers are, you know, the team, based on the pieces that they have, they're the team that can challenge the Cubs along with the Nationals. You know, if you're asking me right now, the Mets, I don't know. The pitching is always something that is the trump card, right? No, no presidential reference needed, but they're the trump card because if the Mets pitching really came together, then they'd be the best team in the league when it came to playoff time. But we've talked at length about the Mets question marks. So that's it. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. George and I are going to talk a little bit of football in the next hour and, frankly, anything else we want to talk about. Got some good articles in the exclusive Edge package. We'll talk about those. It's Mike and George on the Fantasy Sports Radio Expert, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We are the Roto Experts in the Morning with 1 hour to go.